Okay, Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! I'm here. Feast your ears on me. It's too good to be true. But I'm here. You hold a. Thus far, and God, if I had a hammer, I'd knock on the wood with a hammer. But thus far, we still have electricity, which is a good thing, because it would be really miserable without it right now. This program is live. It is the 22nd day of January, 2016. It is really, really cold outside with a whole lot of snow. And surprisingly, I don't know, maybe my neighbors have decamped elsewhere, but again, with the knocking of the wood, we're not overcome by coal smoke fumes. And that, too, is a bonus. About 2 minutes past the hour as we begin this Friday on the front porch, here from the hills and hollers of almost level West by Coal, Virginia, Stan, almost heaven, too near hell by half, West Virginia. And let's see. Oh, it's a refreshingly brisk 50 degrees. Here in the fabulous Horn Studios, just a stone's throw away from the hangar where we keep the Horn Gulfstream 5 and the indoor sauna that is attended to by none of that's real. No, just the 50 degrees part, that's real. And so we've got the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable coming up in about an hour. We do that every Friday evening, you know. There's nothing like that. There's nothing like it anywhere else in broadcast of which I am aware. And if you would like to participate in the Friday on the Front Porch Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, it's very easy. All you have to do is send a contact request on Skype, which is very easy to use. Send a contact request to, you ready for this? Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunk, Sparky Dunk, on Skype. And Sparky will throw out the breadcrumb trail for you to find your way to the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. Get in early. Because, well, the conversation often gets rousing rather quickly. So that's my recommendation. This is, of course, a listener-supported operation, and I want to send out particular thanks to Bill and to William and to Chris, all of whom have us right here at even. For the evening, we try to raise $200 every broadcast evening. 10 at 20, 20 at 10, 1 at 200, etc., etc., etc. Lots of ciphering and gazettas in those etc.s. But that's how we keep this on the air. You see, what we've got here in the Horn Family Community Congregation, what we have here is people doing the work that George Soros should be doing. that George Soros does not support this, I don't think he supports the Malloys. I don't think he supports Nicole Sandler. I don't think he support. No, I don't think. I don't even think the Progressive Voices folks are getting a big old money check from George Soros. When you support the horn, just think to yourself, I'm picking up George Soros's slack. How's that? Yeah. But it's true. It's true. It's how we keep it all on the air. And hopefully we will, after a weird week, we'll have something much more approaching normal, understanding, of course, that normal is only a setting on a dryer. But hopefully next week will be a little more, if not normal, than ordinary. As in, you know, not having a whole bunch of technical and power outages and stuff like that. We're still expecting more winter storm, but it should hopefully begin to be cleared out by Sunday or so. I checked the forecast, and it looks like the snow peters out on Saturday, which is a good thing. And admittedly, you know, it has been a decidedly milder winter. It would be silly to think that we would get through, and it would probably not be a good thing to get through an entire winter without a substantial snowfall. You need it just to keep the bugs down, if nothing else. But no, holy cats! A week from this coming Sunday, which will be my birthday, we're expecting to have a high of 52 degrees. Beach volleyball at the mansion, everybody! Yeah. No. But, so, yeah, we're crossing our fingers. Ferg and I went out for basic necessities, you know, snacks. Because being progressive people, we have functioning brains. And that means we don't go and, you know, invade a bird sanctuary and then send out a desperate plea for snacks. Or, as Al Cracker put it, anything. No, we went out and got gasoline for the generator and a change of oil for the generator and a little stay bill for the fuel tank and snacks. Mm-hmm. The local biscuit hell was shut down, and so too was the oven at gas station pizza. The local Dollar General shut down at 2, as did the Wiggling Pig. People were treating this like the apocalypse. Now tonight, over at Secret Sandwich Society, they're going to have some impromptu music playing, and the people will be merrily probably hiking to the venue and drinking some ice-cold craft beer and having good times and goodwill and good fun. That will not include us. No. It's yeah, it's like martial law out there. Not. Ain't going to happen. So what we've got here is a conversation that we can have over the course of the next 3 hours. And that conversation can go pretty much anywhere you would like for it to go. I have something I thought you might enjoy. I don't know if you heard this or not, but some members of the Horn Family Community Congregation will recognize this noise. Others will go, "What in the sweet name of all is that?" This was from a recent morning out at the bird sanctuary. Yes. The invaded bird sanctuary that no one seems to want to do anything about and will probably give birth to another invasion of another bit of land belonging to we the people, the next one probably in Utah, And hey, so we've had a standoff in Nevada that the feds didn't do anything about. We're having a standoff in Oregon that the feds aren't doing anything about. Now we'll have a standoff in Utah upcoming that the feds won't do anything about. And this thing can just spread like the cancerous thing that it is, as right-wing ignorance just washes over the countryside. At least, however, at least some are pushing back. Now, if you're a regular listener to Dr. Bill O'Brien's Virtual Center for the Study of the Constitution and Civic Responsibility, you may recall an extended discussion he had, last year sometime, about a wonderful short story that is deeply thought-provoking called The People Who Walk Away from Amalas. The author of that short story and the author of many novels and the recipient of many awards is Ursula K. Le Guin. And she writes on topics within the genre generally understood as science fiction and fantasy. She writes on topics that relate to the environment, and she also writes on topics that touch on political, social institutions. And so, in addition to being a brilliant author, she is also a resident of Oregon. And she got up one Sunday morning recently, and she picked up her Sunday Oregonian, and she read the following headline: Effort to Free Federal Lands. An occupation leader says holdings should revert to previous owners. Uh-huh. And being a longtime knower of words, Ursula K. Le Guin read the article, got disgusted, and penned a letter to said publication. She wrote, and remember, the FBI is too timid. The Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms is too skeert to do anything about these ignorant, I mean drop-dead stupid committers of sedition. So it falls to people like an octogenarian novelist who wrote the Oregonian's A1 headline on Sunday, January 17th, Effort to Free Federal Lands, is inaccurate and irresponsible. The article that follows is a mere mouthpiece for the scofflaws illegally occupying public buildings and land, repeating their lies and distortions of history and law. Strong word, that, lies. Incidentally, it's also considerably accurate. She continues, Ammon Bundy and his bully boys aren't trying to free federal lands, but to hold them hostage. I can't go to the Mahler Refuge now, though as a citizen of the United States, I own it and have the freedom of it. That's what public land is, land that belongs to the public, me, you, every law-abiding American. The people it doesn't belong to and who don't belong there are those who grabbed it by force of arms, flaunting their contempt for the local citizens. Those citizens of Harney County have carefully hammered out agreements to manage the refuge in the best interest of landowners, scientists, visitors, tourists, livestock, and wildlife. They're suffering more every day, economically and otherwise, from this invasion by outsiders. Instead of parroting the meaningless rants of a flock of right-wing loony birds infesting the refuge, why doesn't the Oregonian talk to the people who live there? Signed, Ursula K. Le Guin, Northwest Portland. Good for you. Good for you. It's refreshing to see someone trying to speak truth in the face of this monumental idiocy. And I do. Here in a minute, I've got some sound effects for you. But I also have this. Just in case you thought that at some that there might be some iota of something about all this stupidity that had the smackings of intelligence, and most of us, we've disabused ourselves of that, haven't we? You remember John Ritzheimer? Yeah, the deadbeat who won't get a job, who lives on his wife's income, but he carries around his pocket constitution and makes videos telling his daughters how daddy has to go be a hero and maybe die for freedom.
Wolverines!
Yeah. No. Well, dumbass Ritzheimer, and believe you me, I'm being about as charitable as I can be when I refer to him as dumbass John Ritzheimer, idiot John Ritzheimer, dead from the neck up John Ritzheimer, fool John Ritzheimer, pissant John Ritzheimer, dickhead John Ritzheimer, fuckwit John Ritzheimer. He has decided to give Merca, the greatest country in the world on earth now, today, forever, indivisible, under God, amen, hallelujah, in God we trust. I'm missing one. Yeah, well. He's going to give us a constitutional lesson, because the shit for brains John Ritzheimer, him know a lot about constitutioning. So he took to his Facebook page, this numbnuts, this neo-maxi Zoom dweeby, to deliver the aforementioned lecture. Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17. We are here and trying to be as transparent as possible. Oh, that's true. Stephen New York reminds me with regard to John Krakheimer. You forgot the most obvious. Moran! And he is that. We are here and trying to be as transparent as possible. We want this to end peacefully, and if it doesn't, then it's only because of a lack of education on the Constitution and because there were individuals who were willing to just do their job like the Nazis and kill people because an evil tyrant stood behind them and pointed the finger at us. My God, if they're not conservative of anything else, they can serve on the punctuation. What's this talk about wanting it to end peacefully? It's been peaceful all along. I mean, it's peaceful? Hell, it's downright pacifist on the part of the representatives of we, the people who are out here busting our hump trying to, you know, make a more perfect union. I mean, honestly, if the FBI was actually personally delivering the big boxes of dildos upon which they subsist, it couldn't get any more peaceful. But, you know, Nazis. Nah, not yet, Gerald. No. We the people are the boss. It's time for this false illusion of the government being the boss to end. God help us all if they come in here to pick a fight. Well, at this point in time, it just doesn't look like that's going to happen, the John Krakheimer. No. Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17. The feds are not allowed to own or manage this land. They have zero jurisdiction here. Read it, people. And then call your reps and demand the feds back off. Well, if they backed off anymore, they'd be in the Pacific damn ocean. But the fun part is the whole Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17 thing. Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17 is a thing. It really is an honest-to-goodness part of the Constitution. And it reads as follows. To exercise exclusive legislation in all cases whatsoever over such district not exceeding 10 miles square as may be by session or per particular state and the acceptance of Congress become the seal of the seat of the government of the United States, and to exercise like authority over all places purchased by the consent of the legislature of the state in which the same shall be for the erection of forts, magazines, arsenals, dockyards, and other needful buildings. Okay. Anybody want to guess what that's about? Hint, not Oregon. I know. Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17 governs the siting and seating of a permanent place of the national capital of the new country created in the Constitution, what we now know as Washington, D.C. Once upon a time, And Washington, as we understand it now, is all north of the Potomac River. But once upon a time, it really was. It was 10 miles square with the Potomac River running through it, and it consisted of part of Maryland and part of Virginia. Virginia later took its part back. But that whole 10 miles square thing, that's about Washington, D.C. But John Krakenheimer, he seems to think that it's right there. They have zero jurisdiction here. Read it, people, and then call your reps and demand the feds back off. Because they didn't put the seat of the national government in the bird sanctuary? Ooh-wee. Man, that is some high-quality right-wing nut cogitation there. I don't know. Maybe the dildos have gone to their brains. Come on, Bob. What brains? Please. And you know what's funny? There's even stuff in the Federalist Papers talking about that very portion of the Constitution. They talk about the national capital. And he's... I don't know if he's just suffering from wet pants or what, but I'm begging you people, do not let the feds come in and just kill everyone. We're going to stand for what's right, which is the Constitution, which we don't even remotely understand. What does it say? There's not a damn thing in the Constitution that says that that the federal government can't maintain a bird sanctuary for we the people. It's not there. I mean, granted, it's difficult to prove a negative, but seriously. But that's the kind of mental quality that we're dealing with out there. And so now, yes, the sound effects. Like I said, these will be recognizable to some members of the Horn family community congregation. To others, it will come across as, what in the sweet name, what in the wild world of sports is that? Here we go. Just tear off the duct tape that strips the tape and have the hockey puck ready. Come on, guys. You know, for pity's sakes. All right. By God, I'm not going to be slowed down. We'll get it on the other machine. Because this is just too good. Come on, there we go. We'll be there in just a tick. Hardly a trice. There it is. So it was just a lovely morning out at the right-wing occupied Mueller National Wildlife Sanctuary. And they got up and they had their dildos and eggs or whatever it is they're having out there these days. Bacon and dicks, I don't know. There's some sort of English breakfasty thing that involves dick, right? Yeah. Speckled dick. Yeah, whatever though. They had it, and then they went outside to celebrate their constitutional feedum. Personally, I like the little trill that they were, the little Charlie Parker trill that they worked in there. But yes, like I said, some members of the Horn Family Community Congregation will recognize that. That is the shofar. That is the ram's horn that is traditionally blown at the end to signal the end of Yom Kippur, which interestingly is not a Mormon holiday. And, of course, a bunch of these freaks are, you know, Mormons. But that's okay because the Mormons sort of co-opted. And they declared that the lost tribes of Israel came to the United States and became Indians and you know, all of that the silly horse shit. And so one morning there, one morning in Mueller, they went out and did a blowjob on a ram's horn. Yeah, Joshua fit the battle of Jericho. Joshua fit the battle of Jericho, and the walls come a-tumbling down. Really? I mean, this is... I couldn't make this up if I wanted to. I wonder if they're circumcised. I mean, I don't want... Nikki pointing out on Twitter, that halfway sounds like an emergency signal in a jousting event. And Nikki and Jason both remind me, it's spotted dick, Bob. Jason says, and it ain't half bad. My wife is English. The only reason I ever ate anything called dick. Okay. But no, that's I guess that's That's their battle cry of freedom, co-opting somebody else's culture. Huh, how about that? Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe they were blowing them to call in the Northern Paiute, who, of course, according to Mormon dogma and ideology and theology, are lost members of the lost tribes of Israel. You know, I feel brain cells die in my head every time I say that. I do. But that's the stupid. That's the stupid. Carol points out, the horn blows just like the occupiers. It's an insult. They're using shofars. And it is. It's cultural appropriation. Maybe, you know, why didn't they just go ahead and put on Native American dress and maybe some face paint and dance a little in the snow and just finish the job? Assholes. We've got magic ram's horn trumpets. That'll keep the feds at bay. Could it be that the reason that the feds haven't gone in is that they suspect that all of these jerks are actually developmentally delayed, and it would be unfair to just hellfire the lot of them? I don't know. But when they when Blaine Cooper, which isn't really his name, his real name is Stanley Blaine Hicks, when he posted it, he said and of course he typed in all caps, you know, which means you have to scream, but I'm not going to scream. The battle trumpet has been sounded. Time to rise. No. There's an exclamation point at the end of rise, but. The battle trumpet has been sounded. Time to rise. Not sounded, period. Time to... No. Call to action. Send in the troops to stand with us in Burns, Oregon. What troops? Yeah, me neither. By the way, the reason that... Stanley Blaine Hicks is going under the name Blaine Cooper. One wonders if he didn't select Cooper for his alias because of D.B. Cooper. One never knows out in that neck of the woods. Stanley Blaine Hicks, a.k.a. Blaine Cooper, apparently has some 16 felony raps to his name. Mm-hmm. Which kind of makes one wonder what happened to three strikes. Oh wait, that's only for black people. Mm-hmm. Yeah. 16 felony. God Almighty. But yeah, 16 felonies. And he's standing there hooting on a ram's horn. The battle trumpet has been sounded. Time to rise. Call to action. Send in the troops to stand with us in Burns, Oregon. Nice. And, you know, the days just go by. This is 20 days now. 20 days that these seditious, treasonous asses have been allowed to steal federal land from we the people. 20 days. 20 days. And once again, we can simply ask the question, what would happen if Black Lives Matter went in and did a sit-in at a federal installation for 20 days? Just ask yourself that now, because... never mind. You don't have to ask that about Black Lives Matter. You can ask people who tried to do a peaceful sit-in at UCal Davis. Mm-hmm. Ask the folks at Zuccotti Park from Occupy Wall Street. But these guys, well, they're special. So that's a starting place, but it is by no means a stopping place or even a middle-of-the-way place. But that's the latest update from the infestation of stupid. Once again, a warning goes out to people who would like to go and watch movies in movie theaters. Some feedum broke out in a Washington State movie theater. You know, of course, there's this really ignorant movie out there called 13 Hours, The Secret Soldiers of Benghazi. Well, KOMO out in Washington reports that a woman was critically injured when she was shot in the chest at the movie theater. Mm-hmm. So a drunk feedum protector.
Wolverines, Benghazi!
A feedum protector took his freedom protector with him to go see 13 Hours, The Secret Soldiers of Benghazi, at a movie theater out in Washington State. Yeah. And Renton, Washington, the Landing Theater. And the Patriot, the lawful gun owner, became awful. It only takes a second. And fumbled his gun. And it fell to the floor. One witness asking not to be identified because, you know, if you go public and say that you're, then the next thing you know, the NRA Second Amendment Freedom Brigade will be all, why are you telling on a God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered Christian protector of freedom and our Second Amendment? And they'll harass you and threaten your life, maybe kill you for freedom. But one witness said it got about 15, 20 minutes into the film, and I believe the lady in front of us that got shot was actually talking to her husband or significant other, and that's when we heard the loud pop. Another witness asking not to be identified. People are scared as hell of these Second Amendment remedy freedom protectors. There was a gunshot, and we thought it was a light bulb exploding in the theater, so no one really reacted. Yeah, I'd react. I'd at least get on the ground. The police say preliminary accounts indicate that an intoxicated suspect entered one of the theaters and was fumbling with a handgun he had in his possession when it went off, striking another patron seated in front of him. Police state that they received a 911 call from the shooter's father Thursday evening, telling them his 29-year-old son was distraught and that he admitted he had dropped the gun. The police continue with their report. According to him, he said he dropped the gun and it went off. We have witnesses that say he came into the theater and appeared to be intoxicated. He went in and took a seat in the theater in theater number 9 and was fumbling with a pistol when it went off and struck someone sitting in front of him, said David Leibman of the Renton Police Department, adding that the man is currently in custody. Well, okay. At least he's in custody. No real need, Carol. Carol says, ask me again why I fear movie theaters. Not asking. Not going, neither. But this does prompt a few questions. One, where is Renton, Washington? Two, why are you allowed to bring a firearm into the movie theater in Renton, Washington? Three, why are you allowed to bring a firearm into the movie theater in Renton, Washington, when you are apparently obviously intoxicated? And four, because nobody else asks the question, and I feel obliged to ask it now, who is going to cover the damages for the woman who is presently critically injured and in some intensive care unit, if not dead by now? For the injury she received when pouring out a couple of pints of blood in the name of a 29-year-old drunk dude's right to carry a gun to the movie theater. Five? Are we at five? Hey, Wayne LaPierre, remember? And all the little weirdo Congress critters and various gun rights asshats. Remember when you said it would be better if everybody carried a gun to the movie theater? No. So maybe y'all can all just pony up and help pay this woman's medical bills, because assuming she gets better, she is going to have the very devil's own time when they start sending the bills. Intensive care don't come cheap. And that's Washington State. Could just as easily be Alabama or Mississippi Stan or West Virginia Stan or Arkansas Stan or Talibandiana or New York or even Massachusetts. Because Merca. We'll take the reverb as read on that one, okay? So just another little report on freedom. Renton is approximately 10 miles south-southeast of Seattle. Okay, thank you, Marty. Mm-hmm. Just another lovely day here in Merca, where it ain't safe to go anywhere anymore. Jesus. The disease... Oh, well, wait a minute. Ron and Raleigh asking, who the hell is in charge? Usually, in circumstances such as the Oregon standoff, there would be some official of the government standing at a podium giving updates about the situation. The FBI, the ATF, or some such outfit would be the go-to organization for info. I don't know about you, but I haven't heard a bleeping word from the government. I reiterate, who the hell is in charge? I don't think you need to ask that question, Ron, because you know the answer. Bundy is in charge, just like his daddy was in charge down in Bunkerville. And it'll probably be Ryan Bundy in charge in Utah, where they're headed next. I mean, we've got national surveillance. We've got domestic surveillance of our phone calls, our tweets, our emails, what have you. Does the FBI not realize that a majority of America wants these twits taken into custody? I don't know. Maybe they know something we don't. Maybe they know that if they were to try to go in and disarm these freaks, that the troops that or the FBI or whatever who went in wouldn't actually do the job. Well, I'm not going to take up arms against my fellow citizens. They're constitutional. They're bona fide. Hey. Marty noting, next time I drive to Seattle, I know which way I won't be going when I hit the section of I-5 and Washington's version of the 405. No, take the 612 instead. In regard to John Crackerheimer, Steve in New York says, subject line, Star Trek reference, do you have a universal translator? I can't be the only one who doesn't understand gibberish. Well, that was authentic frontier gibberish. River! Oh, dear. This is not inspiring. No, what I said earlier, the disease is apparently spreading. The location of the story is northern Saskatchewan. The BBC reporting this about 37 minutes ago. Tim just sent it to me. At least two dead in Canada school shooting. La Loche Community School. Witnesses report screaming and more than a half a dozen shots. Two schools put on lockdown. An unnamed official told the Associated Press two people have been killed. The premier of the Canadian province of Saskatchewan, Brad Wall, confirms there has been a shooting. He said, words cannot express my shock and sorrow at the horrific events today in La Loche. And then this, of course, my, everybody, 3, 2, 1, my thoughts and prayers are with all the victims, their families and friends, and all the people in the community. Tenth grade student Noel Desjarlais said simply, I ran outside the school. There was lots of screaming. There was about 6-7 shots before I got outside. I believe there was more shots by the time I did get out. And yes, up in northern Saskatchewan, La Loche is a native community of about 3,000 people. God, 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 God. Asa just sent me the story as well. Let's see if... Prime Minister Trudeau has confirmed 5 dead now after the shooting in which the American disease has spread. A suspect is in custody. Chief Teddy Clark of the Clearwater River Dene Nation said he heard that there were fatalities. Oh, God. The RCMP, Royal Canadian Mounted Police, have moved in to cordon off the area and prevent entry and exit. Let's see. Claims of false flag by Alex Jones and the rest of the goobers in 3, 2, yeah. Yeah, there's the thoughts and prayers quote again. Just trying to scan. Asa, please keep an eye on this if you don't mind. Asa noting, this will give the right-wing pigs fodder. See, if Canada was gunned up like America. I know. What's to say? Thoughts and prayers, y'all. Thoughts and prayers. Yeah. Kind of. After a while, these things sort of render you a little bit speechless. So, it's going to be an interesting evening. Hey, by the way, just on a somewhat happier note, have you seen the Bernie Sanders America ad? It is absolutely gorgeous. Tingle inducing, if you will. It uses Simon and Garfunkel's America. And as Charlie Pierce noted, it makes Ronald Reagan's Morning in America ad look like death metal. So, here's the funny part about that. David Brock, who years and years and years ago was a right-wing hitman sent out to smear Hillary Clinton, of course, went on to found, Media Matters for America? And is very much a partisan for Dr. Senator Secretary Clinton, declared that because the commercial doesn't have enough people of color in it to suit white guy David Brock, that the commercial proves that black lives don't matter much to Bernie Sanders. Stay classy, Hillary campaign. Stay classy. But it is. It's a magnet. And you know what? There are people of color in the ad. There really, really are. But you would not know that to hear David Brock. No. But if you get a chance, check it out. And share it around, for that matter. Absolutely. Share it around. It's 5 minutes before the hour. If you go and you watch that ad, not right now, but if you go and watch that ad, notice that the ad doesn't mention any of his opponents. Notice that the message is simply uplifting and hopeful. And yet the Hillary surrogates are already out there trying to slime Senator Sanders over this. Well, I'm beginning to understand why the filth machine is being turned on. You know, with the New York Times reporting last night that Senator Sanders has opened up a respectable lead in both Iowa and New Hampshire. All of a sudden, it's beginning, I don't know, maybe it's beginning to feel like Groundhog Day to 2008 for the Dr. Senator Secretary Clinton campaign. By the way, our good friend Steve in New York has put a $25 challenge on the table. He will match the next $25 that come in fundraising-wise this week, this evening. Thank you, Steve. So look, it's time to fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. If you, like I said before, if you've never participated, send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, on Skype, and he'll get you squared away into the conversation. This is listener-supported conversation radio. Friday on the front porch. Frozen Friday on the front porch. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. Where's the music? Really? Really? Let's see if we can... Now, this is really strange. All right, let's try it this way. Oh, by the way, a note coming in from Robert in Australia. I know stories like the Washington one have got to drive people who live in saner parts of the world around the bend. Robert says, no metal detectors in the cinemas? Why don't cinemas in the U.S. now come with metal detectors and full-body pat-downs? If it's okay at airports, so why not the cinema? You've had terrorist shootings at both. But Robert adds, P.S., I've not been to the cinema since 2004. Seat kickers, mobile phone users, talkers, parents who abandon their six-year-olds at an MA-plus film. On occasion, I might have used a gun on all of them. That's why I no longer go. But no, see, we can't have that. We can't have that, Robert, because then that would mean that people might find out that people are carrying guns into the movies and then they might try to stop people from carrying guns into the movies and freedom would die. Right? No, it doesn't make any sense to me either. But that's how it plays. Wow, this is proving genuinely annoying. just trying to get some damn music to play. See what I meant about wrestling with the machine last night? Oh, thank you. Asa up in Vancouver has matched Steve's challenge. Thank you very kindly, Asa. Thank you very kindly indeed. Come on. All right, we'll try it this way. Go figure. Let's do that whole "this is listener-supported conversation radio" thing again. This is the horn. I originally wanted to play the original Bruce Cockburn version of this. I'm about to settle for Jimmy Buffett.
Billboards promise paradise, and tattoos done while you wait. Possible futures are laid out on the sweeping curve of the interstate. On the sweeping... curve of the interstate. Got no city, got no land. Got no lover, got no wife. How many ways to say goodbye? Can one man fit in a nomad life? Can one man fit in a nomad life? Life's short, call now. Life's short, call now. Life's short, call now. Life's short, call now. Car waves, then it wanes, leaving only voices in the hall. And in the room next door to mine, the bed is banging on the wall. The bed is banging on the wall. You've no idea how I long for even one loving caress, for you to step into my heart without deception or duress. Without deception or duress. Life's short, call now. Life's short, call now. Life's short, call now. Life's short, call now.
Sparky tells me he's doing a restart. Apparently something was not cooperating on the Horn Malloy Skype chat group thingy. But he'll be we'll get the Skype chat group going here in a minute or two. Let's see. Make sure I pause that. Okay, yeah, that stopped. Good. In the meantime, there are a couple of things we can take a look at. We didn't have prayer meeting Wednesday, and so it meant that I didn't have a chance to share this moment of true Christian ickiness. Out in Colorado, Stan, for this you have to add the Stan, a public school district is using its email system to publicize a right-wing evangelical Christian program for girls. Mm-hmm. The name of the program they're promoting is called Wake Up Sleeping Beauty. No, really. Oh, and thank you. Thank you very kindly to Henry for jumping in as well. That means we're up to $100 raised this evening, and that's awesome. Thank you very, very much. Wake Up Sleeping Beauty is a program billed as being for girls as young as 11, and the Mesa Valley School District 51 sent out an email promotion called Wake Up Sleeping Beauty, Worship at His Feet. I'm not kidding. This is so obviously a flagrant violation of the Establishment Clause as to be not even humorous. But when a parent sent in a complaint to the school district, they responded and said, having reviewed the flyer and KHBR per your request, we do not find that the flyer promotes a religious organization or demeans a person or group on the basis of gender. Mm-hmm. I wish I was kidding. I also wish the computer hadn't crashed just now. But no, there's a video that goes with this, and I know Tim's seen it, and several of the people in the chat room most likely. A gross. This woman starts talking to a room full of girls, talking about, do you sit around thinking about your first kiss? I do. I did when I was your age. And I don't know about you, but I was thinking of doing a little peck on the cheek or a little smack. But no, it was disgusting. It triggered my gag reflex. He had his tongue so far down my throat. 11-year-olds. And it's all based on that Bible verse where a woman weeps all over Jesus' feet and then uses her hair to dry the tears off. Oh, yuck. And then the creepy imagery, there's an image of a young woman putting on makeup, and you're kind of looking at her as she would be looking at the mirror. And in the background is this balding daddy dude who's just sort of leering at her. And it's all done to promote the purity agenda. Yeah, purity. Mm-hmm. But that's okay. The school district said they found nothing demeaning to women about it, except for the fact that, you know, women have purity that must be protected. Although, interestingly, there's nothing in that. Nobody's worried about the boys' purity. I haven't quite sorted that one out just yet, you know? No. Just kind of strange like that, isn't it? Unfortunately, that is not at all unusual. You know, we had a call, one of our cherished calls. We had a call last night from the marvelously coherent Diane in Kansas, Stan. And I've got us a Kansas story here. T-Bog over at Raw Story put it in his column. Apparently a, of course, right-wing, upstanding, Bible-believing, God-fearing, Christ-centered, evangelical, amosexual, gun-dementalist is all worried about the way them sluts dress when they come to talk in the, if they let them talk, you know, in the legislature there in Kansas, Stan. And he sort of unilaterally imposed a dress code on women who would testify before the state Senate. And he banned low-cut necklines and mini skirts. We're talking about State Senator Mitch Holmes, a repig-licking from St. John's. And he said he's just trying to make sure that each witness testifying was respectful. For the ladies, low-cut necklines and miniskirts are inappropriate. And when he was pressed on the issue, although who would ever want to press Mitch Holmes, I don't know, he said, it's one of those things that's hard to define. Hard. Put it out there and let people know we're really looking for you to be addressing the issue rather than trying to distract or bring eyes to yourself. Whose eyes? Your eyes? Hey. Yeah, this did not go over so well with the women who are allowed to sit in the legislature there in Kansas, Stan. State Senator Laura Kelly, a Democrat from Topeka, said, "Oh, for crying out loud, what century is this?" And meanwhile, even a Republican, Topeka State Senator Vicky Schmidt, said, "Who's going to define low cut? Does it apply to senators?" Well, if they can see even any portion of your evil demon filled breasts, then your neckline is too low cut. And ladies, trust me, you don't want creepy old Senator Holmes leering at you anyway. So just put the burka on and shut up. Senator Carolyn McGinn, a Republican even, said, "I'm more interested in what they have to say about the direction our state should go than what they're wearing that day." Not Senator Holmes! "You know what? I'm not sure if your skirt's too short. I better come and have a look." You know, the pervy, there's no bottom to that toxic well in the right wing, among right wing men, especially, you know, out there in the heartland. "I don't know why she can't put her hair up in a psyche knot like my great-granny did and wear a gingham or a calico dress that sweeps plumb down to the floor and maybe a bustle or a couple and a high neck way up there right under her chin with a little lace ruffle there and maybe she can have an apron on with some flour still on it from where she was a-rolling out the biscuits." On and on and on and on. Well, now let's see. Do we have the Friday on the Front Porch Horn Malloy Skype chat group restarted? Sparky, are you there?
Hi, I'm here.
I'm here. Hi, Bob.
There's Alex and Billable Rick.
Hey.
Yeah. Hey, Alex.
Yeah, now I am.
There's Sparky.
Okay.
All right.
I was having a freak out with my microphone settings.
That's cool.
Okay, well, we got some echoing happening somewhere.
Okay. I turned my mic off.
Sparky, were you echoing?
Yeah, radio was on.
You know, you're supposed to set an example, Sparky.
Well, I had a freak out. The mic wasn't working right, and I got a new brand new person who wants into the group.
Oh, I think I saw that. Is it Charlie?
Yeah, if I can get him in here.
Ooh, a newbie, a virgin porcher.
There you go.
Now, if I can,
I guess it's better
behave, than that. Behave yourself, Alex. You already had to be told shut it earlier today.
My bad.
Well, I guess it's better than having a new birther in the crowd, right?
Yeah. Well, they just wouldn't be allowed.
There you go.
Yeah.
See if he answers now. I bet I figured out everything.
Hey, can we give you guys a weather report? It's sunny and about 75 degrees here in L.A., Bob.
Shut it, Rick.
It's sunny and about 70 degrees here in Arizona, Stan, Bob.
Yeah, keep shutting it, Alex. Because I don't have Gerald here. Gerald doesn't have my back this evening. You know, Gerald is the official chairman of Shut It.
I learned that the hard way.
Oh, here's Charles.
Yeah, in Gallatin, Tennessee, it's about 28 degrees and about 5 or 6 inches of snow.
and you know what? It's we got about a foot and a half, Charlie. But I got a feeling you got it worse because I've driven around down in your neck of the woods with snow on the road. And you don't wanna. People lose their minds. Oh, we lost Charlie.
Uh oh.
That's not good.
I know. I got a report from email from my sister in Knoxville the other day showing snow pictures.
Hmm. So two days ago. You've got a foot, right, Bob?
Foot and a half, probably on the way to two.
Wow.
Yeah, I used to live in New York City, so you can imagine. I mean, they have brutal storms there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I remember, I don't know if it was last winter or the winter before, where they were, you know, the city was closed for like a week or two due to storms. And people were, like, skiing to work and stuff like that, you know?
Well, we're expecting a low tonight of 18, and the snow is supposed to continue. Well, the chance of snow drops to 40% at 5 o'clock tomorrow.
Ah, okay. Well, don't feel so bad, Bob. I Skyped with a client of mine who was in Minsk, Ukraine.
We have a listener in Minsk.
Yeah, well, it was 15 below there. He showed me he panned to his balcony, and there was snow all over the place.
Yeah,
but it's
a dry 15 below.
There you go. That's right. Let's hope we can get Charlie back on. He's called into the show before, I think, hasn't he,
yes,
Bob?
Yes, he has, and he's a wonderful conversationalist.
Yeah. Is he a truck driver, or I'm trying to remember?
He's a technician.
Okay. Maybe I'm confusing him with Todd in South Carolina. I don't know if Todd's a truck driver or not.
No.
Okay. Well, there you go. Forget about this truck driving thing here.
John's a truck driver.
Confused, Rick.
Yeah.
Yeah. We got 6 1-pound bottles of propane left, and hoping that don't know when they're going. There wasn't a bottle to be had in Oak Hill or Fayetteville or Summersville or no.
Oh, Charlie's back, I think.
Trying to ring him.
Oh. Yeah.
Well, here it's wet and wild.
Yeah.
Windy, rained off and on, next rain this evening.
Wow.
And everything's turning green when you get a little bit of warmth. And the mosquitoes are coming out.
Ooh, I don't like that.
Well, maybe it'll get cold again and they'll get frozen and killed.
Yeah. I'm just happy to be here. I haven't been able to be on for a long time, so I'm not even gonna, I'm just happy to listen to you guys and not even rant about anything. I'm just so exhausted about from what's going on. I'm so spent from the horrors of this world that sometimes I just can't say anything.
Well, yeah, that the world will do that to you occasionally, you know?
I've just been following the thing up in Burns.
Oh, yeah, I happen to.
Yeah, you sent me that amazing video of those clowns going through boxes of Native American artifacts. And I wasn't going to run out, so I just ran around the room screaming a little bit.
Oh,
boy.
Wow.
Well, did you see the road they punched in?
Yeah.
Added another road?
Yeah. Really? They've added a road? Hell, before you know it, they're going to start excavating, you know, a foundation for some building there, you know, and, you know, digging up Indian artifacts that way, you know?
Well, there was a rumor that, I mean, they were cleaning out some of the garages there, and I don't know if there's a big one or nothing, but there was the rumor online that they might have an airplane.
What? Really? Are they going
to,
like...
Because everybody was talking about when those two went to Utah.
Mm-hmm.
Because it takes, like, 20 hours to get there and back. I mean, go there and back driving.
Mm.
And they weren't gone that long.
Hmm. Hmm. That's bizarre.
This is a lesson to all those bastards out there. Keep multiplying and take over stuff and you'll be left alone.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this is like, you know, if a Republican were in the White House, this would never have happened. So I guess that whole hypothetical is a non-starter. But I mean... You know, if a Republican, like if it were Richard Nixon, he'd go in there and crush the damn thing.
Well,
you know?
and remember, this would...
I'm not saying Nixon was great, but, you know.
But no, Rick, your point is well taken. There's no way you can get around the fact that this is racially motivated, okay? They're perfectly happy as long as there is a white male in the White House. Now,
yeah.
To offer a little bit of perspective, if Dr. Senator Secretary Clinton should happen to be the Democratic nominee and should win the presidential election, then we're going to have 4 to 8 years of every bit the same level of hate. It's just going to be different hate.
Misogyny.
It won't be race hate. It will be misogyny.
Right, right. Yeah. And then if Sanders gets elected, it'll be, you know, bashing Jews. You know, I mean, they have to hate something.
Oh no! They're already doing that. The T-Rump has remarked favorably and promoted a Twitter feed that is, well, it's since been locked down. But it's a Nazi Twitter account that, among other things, shows him about to gas Bernie Sanders.
Oh, geez. Whoa.
Whoever runs that account, and it's at White Genocide TM.
Hmm.
Among other things, it lists as the location Jew-merica.
Jeez.
Yeah, because we all know Jews run everything. Jews are in total power of the country, right?
Yeah, and you know what? I can't even get a decent bowl of matzo ball soup around here. So, you know, I wish they'd get on the ball.
Yeah, go figure that out, right?
I can't tell you the last time I had a decent latke.
I'll tell them all for you. I have a direct connection.
Yeah, I mean, get hold of the elders of Zion or something and tell them, you know, quit fucking around.
Yeah, really.
Okay.
Wow.
God, the stupid. I mean, it really. But no, he's out there promoting, Trump's promoting this guy.
Hmm. Crazy. I mean, I'm looking here at this ticker that Sparky just posted from the Center for Western Priorities about the cost of the militants' takeover of the bird refuge. $2.7 million as of today.
Yeah, the cost?
$55.58 per hour is the cost. Yeah.
$5,558 per hour.
Yeah.
But can I ask a question? I mean, I don't doubt that. Okay, but what is that paying for? Because it's certainly not paying for the FBI to maintain a cordon surrounding those stupid twits. It's not paying for drone surveillance. It's not paying to put roadblocks up. They're coming and going as they see fit.
Yeah, I really don't know. I mean, I'm not sure how the Center for Western Priorities determined that figure. Maybe they got the information from the local authorities who've had to maybe hire extra, policemen to, extra sheriff's deputies, that kind of thing, to work extra shifts. I don't really know exactly, but that's not going to account for that much money. So I don't know. I mean, it's costing a hell of a lot of money.
I think Progress has got a link.
Do they? Okay.
How much it costs a day?
Yeah, because it's, they say it's a low-end estimate.
They put on there, this cost to the county, $70,000 per day.
Hmm.
Cost to the federal taxpayer, $23,400 per day.
Hmm.
Cost in lost recreational tourism, $40,000 per day.
Hmm.
So the total cost would be $133,400 per day.
Okay.
That's what that ticker's.
It's things like closed schools and government offices and increased security and things of that nature.
Well, the closed school part I understand because that does cost money.
Yeah, yeah. They're losing tourism fees, $40,000 a day for that.
You reckon any of that goes to the benefit of that community?
I think all of it, almost much of it, yeah.
Does anyone know why these people are allowed to stay? I mean, why are they allowed to do this? Why isn't anybody stopping these people?
That's a million-dollar question.
Yeah, I've heard some theories. There's a part of the problem is there's a real cozy relationship between fish and wildlife people and, the local, people. And they're kind of reluctant to, to come down with a heavy hand on these sort of folks. And that's part of the reason why Cliven never, it took 20 years for the government to finally, try to collect its bill from him. And even now it's not being paid.
Why isn't the government, what is preventing people from coming in there and doing something?
Nothing. Let's form our own militia and, get our guns oiled up and head over there. What do you all say about that?
No, because those bastards will open fire.
Well, yeah, they will. But we can have, we'll have bulletproof gear on and, helmets and shields and, we can fire back, right?
No, because then the FBI would move in and they'd take those people down.
Yeah, yeah. That's true. They'd probably leave the occupiers alone, or the militants, we should call them. The seditionists, we'll call them.
What is there somebody on high saying, well, we're going to, do they have a plan? We're just going to wait it out? Or we're going to, what's...
Well, I don't think there is a plan, Alex, because if the plan was to wait it out, then there would have been a cordon set up around this refuge, and they wouldn't let anybody in or out. And they'd cut off the power and cut off the communication lines, cut off the internet, and, basically try to starve these people out. I mean, if that was the strategy, that's what they'd be doing. So I think they're just hoping that they leave. I don't really call that a strategy.
No.
Bob, what you were talking about Clive and Bundy, if you read in the book of Moses, chapter 7 and verse 8, it says, and there was a blackness came upon all the children of Canaan, that they were despised among all people. This seems to be something inherent to the Mormon religion, racism.
Mormonism started out inherently racist, And you remember, Charlie, it took up until, what, the 1970s for the Mormon prophets and elders to finally even acknowledge that people of color were actually 100% human.
Hmm.
That's not a joke.
I know it's not a joke. No, it's not a joke. I mean, it's, you know, it's kind of sad because there's really no difference between black people and white people. And there's a lot of white people don't understand that. And, you know, black people have had it pretty rough.
Well, yeah. And Native people, you know, everybody who isn't white male. I mean, look how long it took for women's suffrage to become a reality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we're still second-class citizens. There's no ERA, is there?
No, there's not. There's no equal pay for equal work. And the problem is that, you know, there's a huge segment of this culture that thinks that that's either okay or they simply deny that as factual.
Well, what I can't understand is the people that claim to be of the Christian faith, and you know, they come up with all these, all this, where certain people are cursed from one generation to the next, and if they read their Bible back in the Old Testament, it plainly says that you know, that the sins of the father will not visit their children. I mean, you know, you're responsible for what you do, and there's nothing gets passed on from generation to generation. And these people that claim to be Christians don't even realize what they're saying, you know.
Well, I mean, that business with, I have to ask, I mean, since you've got the connections, Alex, did you love the shofar blowing? Well, you've got one right there with you.
Yeah, it's a little one around my neck.
I mean, talk about that. So on the one hand, they're rooting around through precious Native American artifacts that have obviously in the video been carefully cataloged. And so there's some call, like I said, Sparky sent me the video, and I just sat there with my mouth hanging open. And so we need the Northern Paiute to come here and claim their stuff. Hey, or what? You're going to set it out in the yard, Bundy? I mean, Jesus.
It's like the landlords are evicting everybody, and it's time to get, they're throwing all this stuff out on the street.
I mean, they just put these stone tools in plastic bags and wrote on them and put them in boxes, and now they're just sitting back here rotting. I mean, you saw it, Sparky. They claim that stone tools that haven't rotted for about 10,000 years are rotting.
I've got a question. How does bacteria attach to stone such that it causes stone to rot? Is that too sciencey, Bob?
That's pretty sciencey, Rick.
Yeah, okay. I mean, that's, you know, I shouldn't ask questions like that because these, you know, numbskulls would never be able to figure out, you know, what bacteria was, I suppose.
Do you think it's possible for a whole bunch of really pissed off, progressive-minded people to go over there and take these bastards down?
Well, I think...
They're protesting there.
You remember when Dim Leader first opened up Guantanamo? And remember how those people who didn't have anything to do with September 11th and were being warehoused there and tortured? Remember how they were tortured by having really, really loud the music played at them? I mean, for days on end, nothing but the Barney theme at like 100 decibels?
Yeah.
And the Bush administration declared, well, that's not torture.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so what do you say? I mean, just set up there at the perimeter, bring your generators, and set up a massive, like, stadium stereo system. Surely to God, there's some progressive rock and roller out there who would contribute a sound system, a PA system, to just blare the Barney theme at these stupid bastards 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
How about Motown? And 24/7.
Well, no, the Barney will drive you to distraction.
I love you.
Or you know what they could do is they could do the David Bowie Chipmunk song or whatever that's called. That would really annoy you. 24/7.
Yeah, that could get you. But I mean, why do they have to live? They're living there in comfort.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why don't they just cut their power off and cut their supply lines off and just, you know, just sit back and watch?
Yeah,
you know,
freeze, you stupid bastards. I mean, I'm kind of ashamed because it's really just beating my kumbaya gene is taking a beating here.
It doesn't work with these people. That's why, Bob. You know, to get a bully to stop what they're doing, you got to punch them back. You can't just sit back and do nothing.
By the government not doing anything, there's going to be worse things that are going to happen because eventually something got to give. There's going to be all kinds of stuff going on. They're coming and going into towns. There's all these, you know, people are going to get killed. Townspeople, maybe. Other people are going to be coming in to try to get these people. Why doesn't someone in the government just end it? Why? I don't.
They even went to the town meeting.
Yeah, right.
And you know, could have been arrested there. I mean, has Ammon Bundy? I mean, Rick, you had experience within the federal system. You still have experience within the federal system. Has Ammon Bundy not committed any crime? I mean, destruction of property, stream littering, trespass,
he's committed a whole host of federal crimes, but it's almost like the guy's got like a get out of jail free card and stay out of jail free. You know, I don't understand it. I really don't understand it.
Think that the head of the FBI and the Attorney General were fucking Mormons.
You might think so, yeah. Yeah.
But it all started with Cloven Bundy. They let him go. And then, you know, so it all started there.
Yeah. They're using that as a precedent. It's like, okay, the federal government, they're too weak. They're not going to do anything, you know. So, you know, they're just sort of, you know, and then the Republicans have gone bat crap crazy in terms of their ideology. They would almost maybe welcome takeovers of federal, you know, wildlife refuges in some ways, you know. So I don't know. It's got to end. I mean, even a conservative publication like this conservative legal magazine is saying that this is intolerable. This situation, the standoff, you know, you know. So I don't get it. I am totally baffled at the lack of leadership in the Justice Department over this particular case.
Well, I mean, I just want to ask this question. It's rhetorical, and I kind of know the answer. But if the society can tolerate a Donald Trump, can tolerate a bunch of right-wing people, acting like little children and demanding what they want, and they get away with doing whatever they want, they get a pass. But then when the left tries to put out a candidate, or the left doesn't want to put out a candidate who's as angry and as insightful as a Donald Trump, because we're frightened that they're going to throw us in jail. You know, it's kind of an unfair situation. If the conservatives are going to offer a Donald Trump, then we need to offer somebody on our side that's going to be just as angry and be just as be just as incendiary to get people motivated to vote. You know, see what I'm saying? I mean, we handled the right wing with kid gloves. And then the left wing, and then people on the left always get the shaft because we try to be nice. We try to be adult.
I think it's to answer your question, Larry, I think it's the the media is very conservative, and they choose not to cover like progressives like Bernie. Instead, they give all the airtime to, you know, Trump and, you know, Caribou Barbie and Tail Gunner Joe and people like that. So that's part of the problem. You know, as far as like inciting people to riot, I don't think Trump has quite done that. He's come awfully close to the line in some cases, but he hasn't quite crossed the line. And I just don't think that, you know, that kind of behavior would be tolerated by, you know, Democratic voters. Whereas the Republicans, I mean, they're many of them are of authoritarian leanings. Many, I'd say at least half of them are now. You know, they're willing to...
I'd say way more than half, Rick.
Really? Okay.
I mean, the Republican Party, as we understood it, is dead. Okay, it just is. It's been taken over by this John Birch Society teabagger, not even proto, but just fascist rump. And that's who drives the bus. I mean, you know, the National Review's out there saying, you know, we cannot countenance the racism of Donald Trump. Well, National Review, you know, that starts with the what's his name,
Buckley,
Bill Buckley. Mm-hmm. You know, they opposed the Civil Rights Act, the Voting Rights Act. They opposed Brown versus, you know, school integration, all of that stuff. But suddenly they're racially right.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, they don't exactly have the moral chops, let's say, to bust, you know, the current incarnation of the Republican Party, you know?
Right. Meanwhile, note coming in from Steve in China. Steve says, and the Mormons don't want you to visit their beautiful tabernacle in Salt Lake City either. Leastwise, not when I passed through there back in the mid-1990s. They make you feel unwelcome right at the sidewalk, as though you were intruding upon their very exclusive compound. You can just feel the eyes following you around. Too many secrets with those. A cult in word and deed.
Hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, I think, you know... You know, it seems to me that all religions are, to some extent, cultish. But
well, all religions begin as cults.
Yeah, yeah.
Personal cults, shamanistic cults, and when they get really, really big, like the Church of England or you know, the Roman Catholic Church or Greek Orthodoxy or the Southern Baptist Convention, they qualify as ecclesiastical cults.
Right, right.
By the way, in response to what Larry said, Ron up in the frozen north, says, where's Gore Vidal when you need him? and that, you know, that's true. We've lost the great lefties. I very seldom go more than a couple of days without thinking about my dear friend Joe Bagent. We could use him about now, because he was a socialist, pure and simple. Maybe more than FDR style. And, you know, he had a knack for explaining this kind of thing to, you know, hillbillies, because he was one. And I for one, just miss him like crazy. But I do find it interesting that the smears are piling upon smears now, as Bernie gains traction. Like I said, that America ad he put out, I don't give a good goddamn what David Brock says. I mean, I remember, in the last year or two, when the people who worked for him at Media Matters for America were trying to unionize, and David Brock and his management team were doing everything in their power to keep them from having, people who worked there from having union representation. Okay? But the smears are just, I mean, they're now out there just calling him a communist, Bernie.
Even the Democratic organizations are, huh, Bob?
Ostensibly, but, you know, well, these are just surrogates for Hillary. Hillary gets to say that she's staying above the fray, while everybody below her does the filth work.
Right.
I mean,
right.
I went through. I had a couple of people who were just constantly posting anti-Bernie stuff, and it was just vile. Like I said last night, the last one being Bernie Sanders wants to get your deodorant, and I'm like, what the really?
What the f?
And Bernie Sanders once said there's too many brands of deodorant. He doesn't understand capitalism. So, I just cleared that shit out.
Bernie wants to make it illegal for women to shave their armpits, right?
Bernie's a communist because he went to Russia once.
Yeah, for his honeymoon.
Yeah. I mean,
I was really disgusted with a senator from Missouri. She's saying on TV everything. Well, it's not going to work for us to have a socialist president. It won't work out for our country. What a bitch.
Is her name Claire McCaskett?
Yeah, Claire McCaskill. That
no, McCaskett.
What a bitch.
I think we got by the way, also from Australia, Jennifer with a note. Jennifer says, with respect to Billable Rick, T. Rump not inciting riots, paraphrasing from his events. Throw them out. Throw the bums out. Take their coats. No coats. Let them freeze. He is disgusting. He deserves to be roughed up. And then, of course, there's video from a recent T. Rump Clavern meeting in which, let me find it here. One of his supporters, who was just purple in the face with rage, put a protester in a headlock and tried to drag him by his neck.
Jeez.
I saw that.
Well, I guess I stand corrected, Jennifer. If that's not inciting a riot, then I don't know what the hell is, but there's no way that, the authorities are going to step up and, arrest Donald for doing that. Or, he's not going to face any legal consequences for doing that. Whereas I suppose if Bernie would, say burn this thing down or something like that, that would probably draw an arrest,
Yeah.
But I mean, lefties tend not to do that kind of stuff because, we like to use our words, not our fists, let's say, if at all possible.
I saw a bumper sticker today, and it was a picture of the Confederate flag, and it said on it, if you don't like this, then you don't know history. Fucking damn it.
Don't they? This is in Arizona, right? Wasn't
yes, and there's a lot of Trump bumper stickers here.
Yeah. Yeah, the only bumper stickers I've seen, I haven't really seen very many Hillary stickers out here in California. The only ones I've seen are the Bernie ones for the most part,
I saw Carson, but not as much.
Oh, I saw one Carson. I did see one Carson now that you mentioned
it. T-Rump. I've seen T-Rump is the number one bumper sticker, but then all the incendiary ones with like Confederate flags and, other horrible, anti-Obama. Stickers,
Well, Arizona's the state where I know there was an armed protester that was protesting with a gun strapped across his back when Obama was speaking somewhere in Arizona. I think after the Gabby, I think it was the memorial for the Arizona shootings where Gabby Giffords was wounded, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Now, Arizona, that was not, that was a territory when the, or I don't know if it was even a territory during the Civil War, but I guess that was sort of no person's land, I suppose. I don't know if it was really either for the Union or for, the Confederacy. Do you know anything about that, Alex? Alex, you haven't been out in Arizona long enough.
Well, Arizona, New Mexico, Texas,
Indian.
They're all Mexico.
There were a couple of skirmishes out that way during the Civil War.
Yeah.
And, of course, what was his name? Albert Sidney Johnston, who was to be the great military genius of the South. He surrendered his commission and declared himself to be a treasonous son of a bitch and traveled all the way from California to join the Confederate Army and lead it. Mm. He's the one who bled to death in his boot at Shiloh.
Hmm.
You know, justice.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Well, maybe the same thing can happen to Ammon and his
Confederates. Where Trump's concerned, Ron in the frozen north says apparently there are at least three or four interested parties in Canada who are just waiting until the next time T. Rump announces plans to visit Canada. They want to file suit to keep him out due to hate speech. That should be an interesting political challenge for the shiny new liberal government.
Yeah, I love it when the British, did you see that?
Oh, yeah.
Coverage of the British.
Oh, that one woman just blistered him.
It was wonderful.
Bob, let me ask you a question. I was driving home from work late one night, and there's this show comes on one of the top radio show, one of the talk radio stations down here in Nashville. It's Mark Levin.
Oh, Jesus.
And he was talking about a constitutional limit on taxes, and I have read the Constitution, and I can't find anything about any limits on taxes.
It says that
the Congress shall lay and collect taxes.
No, Mark Levin.
But I can't find it.
Mark Levin refers to a constitution that exists only in his own strange little noggin. This is the same clown that wants a constitution of the states, you know, to go in and just pass a balanced budget amendment and then gavel it closed. You know, fool. He knows damn good and well what a constitutional convention would be. No,
Article 5, you just...
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Article 5, you start all over again. I mean, you know.
Yeah, it's game on. I mean,
you start from scratch.
Well, yeah, I mean, you gavel it in, and the minute the gavel strikes the desk, you don't have a government anymore.
Right.
Yeah, you don't have a military anymore. You don't have Social Security. You don't have Medicaid. You don't have Medicare. It all has to be re-ratified. But that's okay with them, Charlie, because they don't like government in the first place, and they're going to get rid of birthright citizenship, and those poor little progressive simpletons who want one of these things, they say, then we'll fix Citizens United. Oh, sure you will. Yeah, you betcha. No, they'll enshrine.
Well, they like government. If they get something from government, what they really are saying when they say we don't want government in all its forms, they don't like the fact that anybody other than a white male gets stuff. Like poor people might get stuff, and working people might get stuff. People might get stuff from their government and be governed. They don't like that. They just want for themselves what the government can do for them, and everybody else be damned. That's really what they're talking about.
Well, yeah. They want
theirs. If they get rid of birthright citizenship, who's going to be a citizen of this country? I mean, the people that we refer to as Native Americans probably came across a land bridge across the Bering Strait. A lot of people came from Europe, Asia. I mean, I don't think anybody, you know, man has when I say man, I'm talking about the human race. You know, they're wanderers. They go from place to place. Who's to say that there's anybody that started up in the United States? You know what I'm saying?
Well, no. I mean, we know directly, Charlie, that nobody started in this area. Nobody started in the Americas. Hell, nobody started in Europe. The cradle of humanity is Africa, and only Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And the dispersal begins from there. You know, I was thinking about my ancient forebears who wound up coming from, at least some of them, from Scandinavia to what we now know as Scotland, Ireland, British Isles. And I got to wondering, what kind of assholes must my ancients have been that they got driven all the way up to Scandinavia, that nobody wanted to live with them where the weather was nice? Nah, keep going. Sorry, you're a bunch of rotten human beings. Nope, keep going. And it takes so long that they turn white.
They had to blend in with their environment.
I just wonder, you know, I've oftentimes thought that perhaps race is just an adaptation of people to the adapting to the area of the earth that they, you know, settled in. And
to a large extent, it certainly is. And the idea of race is entirely it's an intellectual parlor game invented in large part by the British, but certainly co-opted by other white European nations to justify whom they were going to shit on when they were taking all their stuff. I mean, the Dutch, you know, the Dutch certainly embraced racial concepts when, you know, when they went down to what we now know as South Africa. The French embraced it with a will. God knows the Belgians embraced it when Leopold was committing his genocide in the Congo. And you don't find concepts of race in the ancient world. You'll find reference to tribes, to clan groups, to peoples. I mean, the Greeks were such snobs that they invented the word barbarian because to them, anybody who didn't speak ancient Greek sounded like they were just saying bar, 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 bar. It just sounded like they were babbling. And so being snobs, they declared that everybody else was a barbarian who wasn't a Greek. Meanwhile, you get to oldie Mexico and white folks become known as gringos. And that's, you know, it's kind of in reverse. Greeks.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. you're right in your initial thesis, Charlie. The essence of humanity is to be on the move.
And another thing, I just lost my train of thought. Oh, the Greek philosophers, have you ever read Plato's Republic? That is they must have had some arrogant people back then. I mean, because in Plato's Republic, you know, they say, well, you got to know the right people, you got to do the right thing, you got to do the things that look good to other people, and they had their ruling class, their elite, and you know, the more I read about that, it's like, you know, I can't believe these people think like that.
Well, it's among other things, Charlie, it's simply entrenched. It's to a large extent, it's baked in. I need to go back and answer. I need to answer an email real quick. Thomas over at FYINation.com. Under the subject line, A First, says, hi, Progressive Simpleton here. I'm for Wolfpack.com to change the Constitution for Citizens United, and I'll agree with you about the Mark Levin comments. He's wrong, but how am I with Wolfpack.com? Could you please elaborate? We've got a couple of states calling for it already for Wolfpack.com. Open to an education, signed Thomas. Okay, Thomas. I wish I had Dr. Bill handy right now. He's much better at this than I. But you have to understand that there is no such thing, and that's why I call them simpletons, because they are. There's no such thing as a limited constitutional convention. There isn't. All you have to do is ask the man who ran one. His name is James Madison. And James Madison went in for just a little convention, just a tweak. We're just going to tweak the Articles of Confederation, just going to fix a couple of things that are obviously wrong. And then they threw the whole goddamn thing out the window and started fresh. And that's how we got the Constitution of the United States. There is no such thing as a limited constitutional convention. Once it gavels in, everything is on the block, okay? You can't gavel it in and say, we're just going to do this or we're just going to do that. Because once you gavel it in, everything is in play. And you can't stop it. I mean, James Madison admitted that he hijacked a convention. And in the age of Citizens United, you think the Koch brothers aren't gonna hijack one? You think they're gonna go along with this notion of a limited constitutional convention and we'll just tweak this and we'll just adjust that and oh look, there's those precious little progressives and they wanna get rid of Citizens United when we just used it to buy ourselves a constitutional convention. Somebody take them out back and beat them until they fucking bleed, okay? Stomp a mud hole in them, okay? Good. Oh, I love progressives. I mean, it's a degree of political naivete that I find surprising coming from those people who are on board with it. It's, oh my God, you're kidding me!
Yeah, I mean that would be a total disaster. I mean, also I think in a constitutional convention. It sets its own rules as to what it takes to adopt a new constitution. All it would take is a majority vote, a bare majority, or maybe even a plurality.
and understand that everybody who comes to one of those conventions of the states, they're going to be selected by the states. Now, who runs the states? The governor and the legislature. Who, and just out of curiosity, which political party has control of the majority of the states? Why, look, it's the teabaggers.
Yeah, 30 states. They control 30 states, both houses and the governor. And the Democrats only have total control of, I think, like 7 or 8 states.
So every one of those states is going to send delegates who want to go and protect the little fetuses.
Right.
And we're going to go and make sure that the slutty women's ain't forcing us to let them pay for their slut medicine no more.
Right.
And we're going to send delegates who are under orders to make goddamn double sure that Citizens United gravy train keeps on rolling.
Yeah.
The Wolfpack people are simpletons. I don't want to be a total jerk here, but I got no patience for it. I mean, it's a terrible idea.
Are they nominally Democratic, Bob, or what?
Oh, Wolfpack is progressive.
Oh, really?
and you know they're going to get rid of Citizens United, and we're gonna have a brand new wonderful functioning government of the people with democracy, and it's all going to be it's all going to be powered by unicorn farts.
And sparkle ponies are going to be pulling carriages that are made out of gold and platinum and silver or whatever, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I mean, Thomas, I am not gooning. I'm not gooning on you, Thomas. But get away from those freaks. I mean, you might as well be running with the Hare Krishnas, okay?
Bob, are you talking about people on the left that are having the sparkle pony or people on the right?
The left.
Or both?
The left.
Okay.
Can you imagine what our Constitution is going to look like after Sean Hannity and Duck Doofus and all the rest of the Sundays get a hold of it?
Doug who?
Duck Doofus.
Oh, I don't know who that is. I'm sorry.
The duck call people. That think before the Civil War.
Duck Dynasty.
Yeah, that all the little slaves were happily singing and chopping cotton.
Well, you know, Governor Brown had his State of the State yesterday, and he said, we have a surplus, but we need to put it in a rainy day fund, and we're not gonna expand any programs. We need to keep money in a rainy day fund and add to it in case of future recessions. That's what he said during his State of the State.
And also, I think that in terms of single payer, which Gerald Friedman of University of Massachusetts Amherst outlined Bernie's program on what would happen with financing single payer under Bernie. I think that what's her face? Hillary was saying, well, she was doing an Obama when she was saying, well, we already have, a healthcare system in place, and I don't want to go and tear down the entire, I don't want to change the entire, healthcare industry to take a risk at putting in a single payer system. So I don't know what you all have to say about that, but that's what I think, that's what I heard that she had said. I didn't hear her speech, and I didn't hear. And so I'm kind of upset about those two things. I don't know if you heard that.
Well, her daughter Chelsea didn't have to go into debt when she had her children, did she?
No.
Hey, Larry, you're causing an echo.
Okay, I'll mute.
Thank you.
Well, I saw that I saw the brief outlines of Senator Sanders' tax plan, and it's going to be a tough sell. I think the highest marginal rate for the very rich is going to be like 52%. I mean, I think that might be for people making 5 to 10 million or more, but that is going to be a difficult sell. I'd like to get Stephen New York's thoughts on that. I know he listens to the program. I know he emails occasionally, but I don't know that that is, obviously he needs to get a Congress that's completely Democratic to get anything done like that. I don't know. I do like the idea of Medicare for all. I thought we all got ripped off by, turning ourselves over to the tender mercies of the for-profit health insurance companies and giving them, however many million new customers that were required to be, to have insurance or else pay a penalty to the government. We do have to figure out a way to pay for it. And I guess just lifting the cap on Social Security taxes would be maybe even better than, increasing I'm not saying we shouldn't increase the income taxes. And I think capital gains should be taxed the same as actual earned income. Okay, because there's no reason why capital gains should be valued more in our tax system than, stuff that we earn, through the work of our, sweat and brow, so to speak,
Well, how much are you paying for health insurance now?
Oh, I'm probably paying about $10,000 a year.
and what percentage, and I'm not trying to get you to, I don't want to know any personal information, but what percentage of income does that represent?
Well, it's probably a good chunk.
It's probably more than you would be paying tax-wise for universal single payer.
Yeah, I think you're probably right there. Yeah.
I want to share a follow-up from Thomas. Thomas says, I agree with you mostly about changing the Constitution and why the idea scares me to a degree, and that's the reasons you said are what scares me, though I think their actual idea is sound. The Young Turks are the people who started it. I've dealt with the people on the ground, and I know where you're coming from. I would just love a viable way to break up Citizens United, and on paper, their idea seems reasonable, taking it out of Congress. However, when the right wing talks about it, it scares the shit out of me. I have cautious optimism, but I'm more fearful of the right wing blowing it up with the best of intentions. I got to get Dr. Bill on my show to talk about this. You murdered my unicorn, signed Thomas. Well, that's a unicorn that's got to die, okay? If you go back and you learn the history of the ratification of the Constitution, you know that Article 5 Constitution crap was only thrown in there as a sop, and the framers say clearly, we don't intend for this to ever be used, okay? They make that abundantly clear. And Madison knew exactly why, and so did Hamilton. They had hijacked a convention before, and they saw that the Constitution was not easily ratified. A lot of people had to be brought slowly along in the process, and one of the arguments made was, listen, we can't sit here and amend this thing to death to make everybody happy. We got to get this in and then we can throw amendments on. And that's why, I mean, Madison didn't even think we needed a First Amendment or a Second Amendment or a Third, Fourth, Fifth, Sixth, Seventh, whatever. He thought that just kind of stood to reason. And to that degree, he was a bit of an optimist. But it became clear that it was not going to be ratified without the Bill of Rights. And so he caved and he said, okay, then that's the first order of business once we ratify this thing. That's why they are amendments and not in the actual body of the document. So, look, there's a way. Getting it out of Congress, no. If you want to amend the Constitution, then everybody participate in the democratic process. Get yourself the requisite majorities to pass a constitutional amendment on Citizens United. Do it through the Congress like every other constitutional amendment that has ever been done has been done, and you'll get it. And you know what? Here's another one. Ian Millhiser over at Think Progress, who is usually better than this, Ian Millhiser put out this snarky post today, why Bernie Sanders' misinformed Supreme Court tweet matters. He says, Thursday evening, Senator Bernie Sanders' presidential campaign account tweeted out a promise that is likely to bring joy to anyone dismayed by the increasing flood of money seeking to influence American elections. Bernie tweeted, billionaires already own much of our economy. That apparently is not enough. Now they want to own the United States government as well. Any Supreme Court nominee of mine will make overturning Citizens United one of their first decisions. And so Ian gets all snarky, saying, it betrays a serious misunderstanding of how the Supreme Court operates. Unlike a legislature, which is free to take up or ignore particular issues at their leisure, court cases must clear numerous procedural hoops before they are decided, and this is doubly true for the Supreme Court. In reality, it would be nearly impossible for Sanders' nominee. Okay, who's open?
What an ass.
Larry is.
To ensure that any particular case was one of their first decisions. And, you know, Twitter is 140 characters. It does not lend itself to nuance and detail. But the fact of the matter is, the Supreme Court can get rid of Citizens United the very first minute that a lawsuit is filed that puts the case and the controversy in front of the court. Okay? As long as there's standing, and as long as there's justiciability, and as long as there's a case and there's a controversy, and it's not just an advisory opinion, the court can rule. So the minute you get rid of, say, the Kennedy guy, and you put a liberal in there, all right? And maybe just for good measure, you get rid of, Slappy or Uncle Nino decides to spend more time with their family or goes to their long home or whatever, and you get a liberal majority on the court, then bada boom, bada bing, bada bang, somebody's going to file a case dealing with campaign finance. It will be before the court. It will be justiciable. There will be a case. There will be a controversy. And that liberal majority can slit Citizens United's goddamn guts wide open.
This is a practical problem with that, Bob. Okay, being an attorney. A case like that's not going to wend its way up to the Supreme Court for at least 2 to 3 years into Sanders' first term. That's problem number one, and you're going to have a liberal advocacy group to find the correct test case to test right. The validity of that Supreme Court decision. And just second there.
No, I understand everything that Rick's saying, but the thing is, the right wing has proven themselves quite good at it. Hell, I don't even know if we're done litigating the Affordable Care Act, and that was passed when, 2010? So... test case, they were ready. And I'll bet you there are liberal outfits out there, Rick, who are ready with the test case the minute it goes forward. Now, there are problems associated with this. A, getting the right justices onto the Supreme Court. But at least Bernie is saying that he'll do something about it.
Yeah, I agree. I may get interrupted, so I'll try to be quick here. What has to happen is the practical problem we have is that certain provisions of McCain-Feingold were actually struck by the Supreme Court. And once parts of a statute are struck struck by the Supreme Court, the only way you get the statute back is to pass a new one, I think. What's your thought on that, Bob, as an attorney? Or,
well, I'm not, you know, one, and I don't play one former, on the radio. I think your points are well taken, but the larger issue is it is a much more viable way of getting at Citizens United, and you know, for that matter, if we ever get the House and the Senate back, mm-hmm. you can do it legislatively.
Okay. Okay. I gotta go. I'll be back.
All right. Billable Rick has billable work. There's no lead pipe cinch way of doing it. It's going to be hard, however you do it. But unless you're willing to see birthright citizenship go away, unless you're willing to see some sort of stupid balanced budget language inserted into the Constitution, unless you're willing to see women's rights taken away, and that taking enshrined in the Constitution, unless you don't want an Article 5 constitutional convention. You know, maybe it could be held at, oh, I don't know, Coke Arena somewhere. And it will be. And you know what? It doesn't matter how many I'm sure Massachusetts and New York and maybe Washington and Oregon and California would send progressive delegations, and they would be laughed out of the room. They would never, ever even get to so much as speak, let alone offer up something to do with Citizens United. They might very well be taken out behind the arena and have a mud hole stomped in them.
Oh, Bob.
Oh, Sparky.
There is a Charles Koch Arena in Wichita, Kansas.
See? And that's right in the middle of the country now, isn't it? I'm sure it's...
Seats 10,506 people.
I'm sure that's plenty enough to have a constitutional convention. Absolutely. Oh, I just noticed that in the far frozen north, Ron has joined us. Hey, Ron.
Bob?
Are the packets freezing before they get to Canada? Are they freezing leaving here? Or, I mean, how you doing?
No, I'm afraid to turn on my mic for fear of introducing reverb.
No, you're not introducing reverb.
I wanted to make a probably controversial comment regarding, I think it was Rick, was making some mention of tax rates. And you could have universal health care in a New York minute in the U.S., if you cut the defense budget by about 50%, you would still have the biggest defense budget in the entire damn free world.
Yeah.
No, I'm just saying, you don't need strategic military industrial complex units in every single damn state.
Well, that's the truth, and just to extend the notion, there is a way around. The biggest problem we have in healthcare in this country. I mean, I would prefer to have universal single payer healthcare, but apparently there are people out there who want to keep paying ungodly amounts of money to support the Christmas bonuses of insurance company executives. I don't know why, but they do, and they should be allowed to do so. But the biggest problem we have in this country is the problem that arose out of the Affordable Care Act decision when John Roberts declared that the Affordable Care Act could go forward as a function of the taxing power of the Congress, but that the Medicaid expansion had to die. Now, I presume we all know that Medicaid is administered on a state-to-state basis.
Yep.
And that's those block grants that the right wing's always talking about how they love, because it lets the states do what the states do best. And it's bullshit. So the way, there's a hybrid way to get around this. Leave the Affordable Care Act, leave the for-profit part of it in place. Eliminate Medicaid. And in place of it, expand Medicare and expand it on a national level and pay for it on a federal level, just like Medicare is paid for, and take the ability of the Greg Abbotts and the Piyush Jindals and the governor philanderer down in Alabama and all these other stand states, take their ability to say no away from them.
Mm-hmm.
That would work.
You know, I think one of the reasons we ended up with universal health care in Canada is because Horatio Alger was born in the U.S. And the idea that everyone can become rich and successful never really seemed to be a driving ambition up here. At least I haven't uncovered it. And more of a sense of community, if you want to call it that. So, I mean, it goes back to the 18th century, moved to the U.S., of A, the greatest country in the world, and if you work real hard, you can get rich. I haven't encountered that anywhere else I've traveled in the world as a mindset, except possibly Russia after the latest revolution in the last 25 years.
Oh, which reminds me of another thing, Ron, and you know, I'd like to bring this up since we were talking about the Cokes as well. You know, everybody knows the story about how Grandpappy or Pappy Coke, you know, Chuck and Dave's dad, Pappy Coke went over and built oil refineries for Stalin. And he became very concerned about communism because he felt it just made him love America so much. Now, the fact of the matter is Stalin stiffed him. But guess who else Pappy Coke built refineries for?
The Nazis? Hitler?
It would be 8:21 p.m. 8:21 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Who had 8:20? Damn it, Gerald!
Damn it, Gerald!
But you are correct, Alex. And oddly enough, though, Pappy Coke didn't come home worried about how vile and awful Nazism was. He came home an anti-communist. And he was building these refineries for both regimes during the run-up to the Second World War. But it was Stalin he decided he didn't like. It was communism that bothered him. He was A-OK with Nazism. Oh, and by the way, Harry in Baltimore reminds me, Ron, and I'm sure you know this, Horatio Alger was, in historical reality, more than likely a sexual abuser of little boys.
Well, I remember reading his books as a kid, and the other thing I remember about his books is that none of it stuck.
Yeah, well, that's because it was errant BS. No,
no,
right?
No. Yeah. No, no, no.
Well, let's check in real quick. Roger has been very patient and very silent up in Minnesota. Hey, Roger.
Hey, Bob.
How in the world are you?
Plugging along on a Friday evening. I just made an exotic dish of quinoa made in a special way that I have been cooking for about 20 years with garlic and ginger and sesame oil.
Oh,
and
dang, that sounds good already.
It is really good. And everybody who eats it likes it.
I love quinoa.
Did you get my email with a transcript of Thursday's program?
Yes, I did, and I was surprised by that.
That was done by machine. It cost $3. I downloaded the MP3 off of White Rose Society, uploaded it to a particular computer system online, pressed a button, and 15 minutes later, that's what it spat out.
I wonder if that's sort of the way that they do those so-called rush transcripts for Democracy Now.
They probably would have a human involved to get it a little bit more right. With all the pauses and burps and bumps in the show, it doesn't get everything.
Now, I try not to burp.
Okay, well, I didn't mean it that way. But at any rate, my comments to you about the possibility of scanning and culling from your filibusters, I think that there is a viable and not too awkward method for possibly making that a reality.
It certainly seems that way, and I hope to investigate it further.
Okay. Well, just thought I'd mention that.
Well, go ahead.
How's your foot and a half of snow?
Trying to become two.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there is no bottled water, there is no bread, there is no milk and no propane bottles on grocery store shelves.
And nonetheless, I'm sure the air is refreshingly coal smoke saturated.
No, that's the surprising part, Roger. I'm wondering if maybe my neighbor has decamped or the wind's blowing in a different direction. There's no coal smoke to be smelled whatsoever.
Well, breathe while you can.
Yeah, no kidding. It's almost enough to make me want to set fire to something else. You know, maybe something that has wound its way here to the hills of Appalachia from the verdant fields of Cuba via the frozen north of Canada.
I think we have to load you and your beloved onto you can find a pretty nice old Ford van for maybe about $1,000. Put the necessary equipment to run the horn on a marginal basis, and send you out California way for a few months.
I think that would probably be very good for our mental health.
Yeah.
We'd just have to figure out a way to make sure the house was still here when we got back.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't necessarily recommend going into the depths of the major urban areas. Maybe you could go and park under Sparky's redwood tree.
That'd be fine. Go up and hang out with Roger, who isn't here this evening, up in Humboldt. But no, you know, do wander down into the Bay Area. God, I love the Bay Area. Because if nothing else, I got to go to Swan's Oyster House again. Swan's mm-hmm. Oyster Depot. I'm sorry, Depot.
Mm-hmm. There's some killer Italian restaurants in San Francisco, not to mention every other kind of restaurant.
Oh, no doubt.
They're so expensive. When I went there a few years ago, my sister had a big thing through her, she stayed there for her job, and she invited me, and I stayed in her hotel room. We went out to eat, and it was a fortune. It was a king's ransom every meal. It was unbelievable.
But was it yummy?
You know. Yes.
I went to this Haight-Ashbury soup kitchen.
I should have checked that out, Roger.
It was pretty cool. Interesting people there.
Oh, I have a picture of my sister and I. We smoked a joint in Golden Gate Park, and I took a picture of us doing it. I said, here we are in Golden Gate Park. You have a joint. You got to do it, right?
Well, I bought when I was out there, I bought a little hand carved wooden bowl, right on the from a vendor right on the street, and later was gifted with something with which to put it to use, and it stood there right on the street, and no problem, left me alone. Yeah.
Wow.
And in fact, the natives told me, no, if you're not standing right by the curb when you light that cigarette, the cops will roust you over that. Yeah, the weed they're not going to worry so much about. And so we were standing in line to get into Swan's Oyster Depot. They brought us an ice-cold, frosty, fresh Anchor Steam draft out, and we were just standing there. Wonderful. And you know what? It made the oysters really good.
Oh, yeah. You tasted more subtleties that day than you ever could have.
Oh, my taste buds were singing arias, and the sea urchin roe was just not. It was creamy and not to be believed.
Hey Roger, how's the weather up in the frozen Minnesota land?
Well, we just had a week and a half of actual January, where it got, we had a day when the high temperature was 4 below. So that was refreshing. It may have killed at least some of the ticks and mosquito larvae and especially the fleas, I'm hoping. So we got a little bit of semi-pseudo-normal weather for January, but we've had a really warm winter by and large, not much snow. Right now it's about 27 degrees outside, and I grew up in a day when it was not unusual here to have a period of 2 to 3 weeks where it really didn't get above zero, where the highs would be zero-ish, and 20 below was commonplace. I remember 37 below actual measured temperature. It's in my lifetime, the weather has changed quite dramatically here. Desertification has moved towards the cities. They're drier than they used to be coming in from the west. And the destabilization of the jet stream has changed the weather dramatically, even less predictable than it was. And I remember beginning to notice the winter in particular start to change clear back in the mid-70s, 1975 to be specific. And I've been watching it changing and changing and changing ever since. It's definitely on a different track than it used to be.
And we finally have winter in Ottawa. Paraphrase Roger, it's just turned into finally a normal January. I think we had one stretch here for about 3 days where the high in Fahrenheit was like -6, -7, something like that, and the low was 23, 25. That lasted for 2 or 3 days, and then it warmed back up. Today it was all the way up to 20 degrees, which is unusual for this time of year here.
So just out of curiosity, are people out walking around, moving around, doing things, playing ice hockey on the frozen ponds and stuff like that in that weather?
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah, here too. Here, basically, the rule of thumb is it's safe for the kids to go outside and play, no worries, when it gets about 10 degrees.
It's too cold to play hockey here if you spit and it freezes before it hits the ground.
That's a great one, Ron.
I saw a video yesterday came out of Canada, Syrian refugee kids. Tobogganing, yeah. For the first time.
First time ever. And another story that came out is a group of them ended up in Edmonton, of all places. If that's not the end of the world, you can see it from there. And they hadn't been in Edmonton for a week. They got the first ever real serious cold they'd ever had in their lives. I think we've had about 650, 700 of them arrive in Ottawa. And it's one of the interesting things that have come out of all this. The campaign promises must be honored. And the aid agencies that are helping settle these people, find homes for them, empty apartments, furniture, clothing, etc., are all raising their hands in the air and going, hold it, hold it. It's not fair to these people to bring them in here and stick them in a hotel for a while, and we've got no place for them to live. So... it's just the capacity of the system here to deal with it is starting to cause some issues. But they're coming, and we're happy to meet them, and they all seem to be quite happy to be here.
When we had that spell of cold weather in the last week, the local municipal bus system ran the buses and the subways all night long and put the word out that anybody that needed to could get on the bus and ride it all night. So they without needing to pay another fare. They did want people to pay one fare just to avoid too much disorder, but I don't ever remember them doing that before, and it seems like with all the homeless people that we have here, that wasn't, I mean, it sounds miserable, but better than freezing to death, you know.
Yeah, better by far. Had a request in the chat chat room asking Ron, do you have any kind of update on what happened in Saskatchewan?
Only that they have are holding a juvenile, and I think the last I heard there were three confirmed killed.
Five.
What happened in Saskatchewan?
School shooting.
Oh Jesus!
By a kid.
Up in Indigenous country.
Yeah. Or Native country, as it's occasionally referred to here. But there's a lot of troubles in that community in Canada, probably more so than in the U.S. And there have been some really honest attempts to get it for the United Nations, particularly under the Harper government. There are Native communities in Canada that have not had running clean water for 20 years. The government trucks in water, flies in water. The healthcare system is abysmal, and schooling system is abysmal. A lot of these reserves are way to hell and gone away from major metropolitan areas. And the support system is just not there. We've got a Department of Indian Affairs. I'm not sure it seems to change its name with every government that comes in. But I think it's called Aboriginal Affairs now. That has had a paternalistic view for 50 years of how natives should be treated. They should not be allowed to set their own budgets, govern themselves, educate themselves, etc. And it is starting to have some major downside social impacts, particularly in Manitoba and Saskatchewan, where hundreds, perhaps thousands, of natives end up in the cities, homeless, on drugs, causing major social upheaval, and dying. There's approximately 1,000, maybe 1,200 open cases of Aboriginal women who have disappeared in Canada. And
just not a hell of a lot of urgency attached to it either, is it?
There wasn't with the last government. The current government says they're going to bring it out into the open. We just had a Truth and Reconciliation Commission that met for 3 or 4 years on what was called residential schools up here. We're back from the 1900s to up into the 50s. Native children were taken away from their communities, put into schools run by the churches, both Catholic and Protestant, and their language was taken from them. They were beaten. Many of them ran away, died, and nothing was ever done. It was an honest-to-God attempt to abolish the culture. And it's shameful, and it's finally coming out in the open. I spent a few years in foreign affairs, our straight pants diplomatic organization up here, the equivalent to the State Department. And towards the end of my tenure, I was at a meeting where we were talking about ostensibly what we were going to do to address the horrible situation in Bosnia and Herzegovina regarding refugees and how terrible it was. They didn't have running water. It didn't have a functioning education system. At which point, Ron raises his hand and says, we don't have that on many reserves in Manitoba, British Columbia, Saskatchewan, Alberta. Why aren't we talking about them? And I was escorted from the room. In our own damn department, I found it very interesting. Nobody wanted to touch it back then. That was in the late 80s. But it's much more in the forefront now.
Well, it is a deep and abiding shame in Canada, as I based on my reading, but I give the Canadian government some credit for at least attempting or saying they're going to attempt to address it. You had attempts at genocide both in Canada and the United States, but somehow or another, Canada has managed to. But the Indigenous people in Canada have managed to hang on, I don't know, more or less successfully than Indigenous people have here. And, you know, we've got a listener who works up in the Northwest Territories.
Yeah.
And says that, you know, this is, the Horn is his community, based upon the work that he does and the sort of emotional distance that he has to maintain. But he sees the problems of that community on a very, very close and very intimate basis. And, you know, one of the problems, tell me if I'm wrong, Ron, is that, and it's the same problem that attaches to so many situations down here, is that the people who are affected by these problems do not have enough political capital, read money, to make themselves valuable.
I'm not an expert, Bob. I'm just an observer. I would agree with the premise. There have been several cases in recent years where the Natives have stood up for their rights, or what they perceive to be their rights. And in each case, in one case there was the fatalities. In another case in southern Ontario, where a developer wanted to build a subdivision, the natives took over the area, blockaded the roads, nothing happened. Lasted for a year. Politicians lost their jobs, police officials lost their jobs, but nobody died. And up in, I think it's northern Ontario, there's an area of mineral resources called the Ring of Fire, where an old asteroid or meteorite hit, incredibly endowed with nickel, chromium, other really valuable minerals. And the natives in that area are going, no, you guys ain't developing this until we get our share. And the traditional resource industry is going, no, we can't pay for all of that. And the province is saying, well, we'll build roads, etc. But they've been talking about it for so many years, and the natives aren't backing down, that the provincial government is saying, well, maybe we'll just
That's where the Idle No More movement was born, correct?
That's right.
Well,
partially there. It was also born in parts of northern Ontario and Quebec, where there's a really large Cree community and Algonquin community. So, the Ring of Fire was, I think, the impetus for us. They understood that they had enough wampum on the table to get somebody's attention, and they're using it.
But there are some peoples, Ron, who simply say, "Yeah, I don't care how much you want to pay for it, you can't have it. We don't want it done."
That's right.
Because you go to the north of the tar sands hellscape, and those are Indigenous people being shat upon.
That's right. There's no easy answers for it. It's hard to correct 150 years of history in simply a decade or two. But I think the will is here to do it. If it's not entirely here, the will is emerging to do something about it, which I think is positive. There's still going to be a hell of a lot of battles between now and then. And then we've got other situations where the natives are willing to do something with developers and third parties intervene and go, no, you should not be allowed to do that. I'm not going to name any organization's names, but West Coast of British Columbia is a prominent example of that. At least from what I read in the papers back here in the frozen east.
And there is a whole bunch of Canada that just rolls out forever westward from you.
Oh, son, there is just so much Canada. Most people in the U.S. have no idea how big Canada is.
Well, I mentioned our friend in the Northwest Territories. He sent me some photographs. And one of them was of a sunset over a lake. And it was so damn captivating and so beautiful.
Yeah.
That I made it my wallpaper screen on my tablet. And, you know, every time I turn it on, I just take a second and just look at it.
The land up there goes on forever.
And when you see something like that, you can imagine, to go back to what Charlie was saying earlier about the essential nature of humanity being mobility, you could wander around that forever and live pretty good.
Yep.
Once, you know, again, the same thing I felt like when I first saw the Wisconsin Northwoods, once you solve the essential problem of the winters, you're living in an evolutionary and cultural development playground.
One of the best comments I ever heard about how big Canada was a guy said, Canada is so big that you can find places to build a home where you will never be bothered by the Mormons, the Seventh-day Adventists. Nobody's going to come knocking on your door trying to save your soul.
But the Jehovah's Witnesses will find your ass.
They'll find everybody. They'll show up almost everywhere except a particular small hill in West Virginia where they haven't appeared in several years.
Wonder why.
There's an antidote to that. Have you guys heard Malloy's story about what he does when proselytizers come to the door?
Well, what does he do?
He basically goes to the front door butt naked, and they never come back.
You know what, Rick? I'm going to do that next time.
That'll work.
They don't bother me. I used to get them more when I was living in New York City years ago. Nobody has come to my door here, and when I lived in Vancouver, Washington, very rarely. But my mother had a tradition. If anybody would come to our door, we would yell out, "There's nobody here in here but us atheists."
Well, I've told the story before about the Jehovah's Witnesses here took a shine to Agnes. Everybody does, and so they got to where they were stopping by every Saturday or something. And at first, you know, she was pleasant and hi, yeah, hi, can I get you a cup of coffee? Yep. Never let them through the door.
Like a vampire.
But eventually it got to, we'd hear them, we'd see them pull up, you know, we were peeking through the curtains. And Agnes would go and hide in the bathroom. And one of us would go out on the porch to speak to the Jehovah's Witnesses and just dispatch them with some alacrity. And we referred to that. We referred to those moments as Agnes going into witness protection.
So she was witnessing protection. Is that what she was witnessing, Bob? To be biblical, I guess, or evangelical?
She was being protected against the witnessing.
No. She was witnessing protection.
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
By the way, note coming in from Randy in PA. He says, we're talking about that Northwest Territories landscape. He says, a landscape like that isn't complete without the sound of the loon calling. The loons, Henry. The loons. But my God, the Northwest Territories go on for freaking ever. And everywhere's a lake. And I guess that's all just because it all got scrubbed, you know, those lakes got scrubbed out and dug out during the last great glaciation. But damn.
So we'll have to have some more stories from the Northwest Territory as soon as he hears this particular program.
Oh, I wanted to bring up a couple of things.
Oh, and by the way, Chris is listening live, and he says Ron is spot on with his analogy. So, hey, Chris, I'm probably looking at you at a very high distance on Google Earth right now, somewhere. I mean, what's the provincial capital of the Northwest Territories? Did I just lose everybody?
Ron's gone.
Oh, wow. Where'd Ron go?
I don't know. He just dropped off the call.
Oh, okay. He said he had to sign out.
And Steve, I don't think, knows.
It's kind of split in half. Part of it is the Nunavut territory for the Inuit, and Iqaluit is the capital there. I'm not sure about the Northwest Territories.
And by the way, I'm having issues with Skype. I was trying to type back a good night to Ron, and for some reason I'll go to type a message in Skype and it just hangs and sits there for a while. I don't know. This is a fast processor too, so.
But, so Steve, are you getting heavy wet weather up your way or not?
Quite nice here. It's not bad. They're getting all the weather in the south to the south of us.
Okay. I guess the jet stream went below you then.
Yes.
Okay. That's cool.
There's a newer version of Skype now, I think.
I think I've got the most recent update on it because it ran the other day. Mm. Oh, and here...
I just typed the message on. It posted.
We got about 9 minutes to go, and... Again, thanks to everybody who has helped out this evening. We got about $100 to go, and we're good for the week. So thank you one and all because this has been such a bizarre week anyway. Thank you very, very kindly. A reminder to anybody listening live, this conversation will, of course, continue at about 12:05 Eastern time immediately after Malloy's program closes. So. And that's when the conversation gets really rocking and rolling.
12:06, Bob.
Oh, 12:06. I'm sorry, 12:06.
Haley wants to say something.
Yeah, hey, Haley.
Hey, it's been a while. Y'all were talking about the Seventh-day Adventists. They filed a lawsuit with a little town in Arkansas involving door-to-door solicitations, and they're wanting to go door-to-door in this little town in Arkansas and hustle their messages. So that's going to court. Also, an issue that's much more important than that is right now the legislature, they're not in regular session, but the governor's wanting to have a special session. And there's some legislators that want to repeal the Medicaid expansion, which is actually a private option. But even that's not too much for some of the Republican legislators that want to go and eliminate all of it.
Well, they're afraid, Haley, that people will get it and like it.
Exactly. And that it's going to be a mess.
When are we going to revolt against these bastards that are making us all suffer? When will there be a revolt?
Well, I mean, but, you know, if we could do it state by state, have some sort of caravan of millions of progressives who would move to a state, register to vote, flip the government, and then move to the next one, we could do it. But the problem is, the larger question, Alex, is how do you get people in those states to do what to do the right thing for themselves? I mean, And that's part, you know, that's part of my enthusiasm for Bernie's campaign. He wants to empower people to get it right in places like Alabama and Mississippi and Arkansas.
I don't think a lot of the people in this country understand what socialism is, and how much of how much socialism is already in place in the United States.
Most people don't know what socialism means, including those of us that think we know what socialism means.
Well, there's, I mean, there's different degrees and different kinds. But of course, what, you know, what Bernie's being smeared with right now, and these are some ugly, I mean, nasty, red baiting McCarthy era smears, is that, you know, he wants there to be one deodorant factory in America, and it's going to be owned by the government. And there's going to be one breakfast cereal, and everybody's going to eat cornflakes and like it. Because it's just going to be a government command economy, all of which is just crap. But that, you know, that's how that, you know, that's how they're painting it.
Well, the problem is that it's these ideas have kind of filled the void, because Bernie hasn't very clearly explained what the ideology of socialism is and what it means. He's just talked about the policy prescriptions that, let's say, would be considered democratic socialism. He hasn't, you know, said, for example, you know, we believe in, you know, private enterprise, but
well,
on
no,
a small
scale. Actually, Rick, he has.
Has he? Okay.
Yeah, there are quotes out there where he says, listen, I don't want to control the means of production.
Okay.
But I would like for the middle, I would like for the working class to have a decent life.
What do you think about worker self-directed enterprises or worker co-ops, or where the workers, you know, buy the, you know, the workers buy the factory if the factory's failing, and then they decide themselves, you know, how to distribute and how to, you know, they cut out the middleman, or they cut out the extra management that gets all the profit on the top.
Well, I mean, I love the idea in theory. I think somebody like the marvelously coherent Diane from Kansas, Stan, would be a much better person to talk about it in practice. You know, in to one degree of analysis, the problem that arises is that you have to deal with, you still, even if it's worker directed or worker owned, you still have to deal with the with capitalism and the free market. And if you're talking about something that has shares of stock sold on Wall Street, Wall Street will punish you for doing that.
I know that United Airlines...
That's exactly who I thought of, Rick.
It's employee-owned to some extent. I don't know what percentage. And I know that Tom Hartman is always talking about this cooperative in, like, Spain that's like this
Mondragon.
Huge... Mondragon. There you go. Mondragon, yeah. He's always talking about that on his show, and that's a different kind of model. But the problem is, once you have this specific capitalistic model in place, you know, you have fixed ownership rights. And so for the workers to take over a factory, they're going to have to pay off the people who already own the company, which are, I guess, the shareholders. And so that's the practical problem. How are these people going to raise the money to buy the company, essentially?
You know, the only way they'd be able to buy the company or take it over is if the company decide, you know, either gets fails and the owner has to sell it, or the owner decides that they're going to retire, and then the owner says, look, instead of, you know, keeping the ownership or the board of directors the way that it is, I'm going to retire. So therefore, I'm going to give the workers the option to take over the company and start running it as a cooperative.
Okay.
Or the options that are being offered.
What you can do is you can look for companies that are in bankruptcy and try to buy them for pennies on the dollar, like Freedom Industries. Don't laugh, Bob.
Stop.
This is what Richard Wolff and Gar Alperovitz and I hope I'm not echoing. I'm really trying to work with Skype on this.
You're doing great.
The echo thing. But the thing is that this is what Richard Wolff and Carl Perovitz are talking about as a corrective to the economic system and its excesses right now, if you listen to their shows. You know, they're all about this. So, okay, thank you.
It's time.
Hey, it is time. Let's clear out of here. I was just looking at some photos that came in from Chris up in the Northwest Territories, and he tells me it's Yellowknife. Yellowknife is the provincial capital, and I'm looking at an absolutely stunning picture of the Aurora Borealis. So that's yeah, and thanks again for everybody who has chipped in this evening, and. Thanks to the Horn Molloy Skype chat group. Thank you, Sparky, for your continuing moderation of the group. Thanks, Roger, for jumping in on fundraising. We got about $90 to go to finish out the week and the evening. It's how we keep this all on the air. And I reiterate that I think that what happens here is really, really special. This is a community like nothing I've ever experienced, and I thank you all so very much. I'm going to go and work on being warm. Can't feel my feet right now. We're down to 48 degrees here in the studio, so. Yeah. Might even splurge and put on a bottle of gas. Mm-hmm. Y'all have a wonderful weekend. Back with more Ann Monday before you know it. Take care. Be well. We'll talk soon. And always, always, always. Gina. It's all for you. Good night, y'all.